This week's episode of North Carolina Theater Stories is brought to you in part by Walter Guy Jewelers, located at 210 Hay Street in downtown Fayetteville. Walter Guy Jewelers specializes in antique and unusual jewelry. Founder Walter Guy Sr. established his first jewelry store in 1963. Another fine downtown business is Greg's Art, Pottery, and Gifts at 112 Maxwell Street in downtown Fayetteville. Greg's offers visitors the ability to paint their own pottery on the spot, making each gift a personal and unique piece of art.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. Take me back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 15. My guest this week is Brian Adam Klein. Brian is a native of Moorefield, West Virginia, and a graduate of West Virginia University and its studio acting program, where he earned a BFA in acting. Currently, he is Activities Associate and Co-Education Director at the Gilbert Theater. Brian, welcome.
Hi, Lynn. How are you?
Very well. Right, we have just been listening to our wonderful theme song, I Never Tire of It, Longing for Dear Old Broadway by Cole Porter.
That's a great song.
And, you know, every time we have a guest here, I can't help but ask them, if you could be there, what would you be doing? So I'm asking you right now, what would you be doing if you were on The Great White Way?
Well, of course, I'd be directing. Directing is, you know, acting something that I studied in college and did a little bit out of college. And I've got this, I've gotten back into this directing thing, and I really enjoyed that over acting,
I see.
Believe it or not.
Well, that happens, doesn't it?
Yes.
All the time.
Yes. I think it's because I kind of like to be in control in a way.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, but do you have a particular play? You know, you are able to, in this fantasy world, you're able to go up there and direct, expand. What would you like to do?
Well, direct? I've directed Streetcar Named Desire before I was 30, so I think probably the next dream would be to do Salesman. So, Death of a Salesman.
And do you know that when I was in college, we had something called Campus Capers.
Mm-hmm.
And the title of this year's Campus Capers was Death of a Streetcar. And so we had more fun with that. Anyway, now, Brian, you see in front of you a red box.
Yeah.
And you're not to touch it yet.
Okay.
In a moment, you are going to touch it. You're going to take off the lid, and you're going to take out whatever you find in there. And describe it to our audience. After all, this is radio, isn't it? You're going to describe it to our audience, and then you're going to, very briefly, you're going to describe it. One week, I failed to mention that to our guests, and it went on for 5 minutes. And anyway, and then you're going to tell a story about what you found. It can be made up, it can be the truth, or a combination. Are you ready?
Yes.
Open that box. And what did you find?
Okay, well, there's about 6 or 7 of them. They're round and hard, and they're kind of cool. Like,
you can just say they're marbles.
Okay, well, here's a little true story. Marbles are actually created in my home state, actually. They have glass plants there that they make glass, and actually marbles where they would blow the glass and turn them into round pieces of marble like this, and that's where marbles
but
were.
Is it, was that kind of a byproduct, or was it?
Did they, I think it was like a byproduct. To begin with. And they actually, there's a company there that still makes marbles that come out right out of West Virginia.
Well, there's a true story, I assume.
Yes.
Well, good. No, I'm flashing on the marble games we used to have in elementary school.
Uh-huh. Should give him a drum set next.
And James is a little bit upset. He failed to talk about the sensitivity, how sensitive the microphone is. Extremely sensitive. As is our technical director. Very sensitive. Very sensitive. In fact, this week, he's just gotten so sensitive on me that I'm not going to say one thing about his mother, I hope. But Mary, we'll see. We'll see. One never knows.
You got her number on speed dial.
Well, thank you. You can help me get through to her. But anyway, yes, playing marbles when I was a kid in the 1940s was the greatest fun. And when the recess bell rang, the person who said Grabsies first got to go down and grab all of them. And I never thought I was too busy concentrating on my next shot. But there was my best friend Robert always knew that. And he's a multimillionaire stockbroker now. Wow. And I'm a down and out impoverished theater person. But there it is.
Who has more fun though?
And who has more fun? That's exactly right. Thank you for that really fine box. Mm-hmm. Story from our red box. Now, Brian, we come to the heart of our time together, and I want to talk to you. Let's talk about children's theater.
Okay.
Very, very dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. I was a children's librarian and worked in puppetry and theater wherever I could. But tell me your background with children's theater. What is it? Did you take classes about?
Well, when I was in community theater, obviously I was a kid myself in children's theater, and then I went on to college and took creative dramatics, took puppetry classes. Actually, a lot of people don't know this, but the university I went to, actually there were only 3 puppetry programs in the nation.
And they had one
of them is Virginia University. And so you learn a little bit about, like, our head professor was really good friends with Jim Henson, and we got to go and, like, visit his wife, and that was always, you know, that was something I really remember. So, you know, directed some plays in college, took part in a lot, like Peter Pan, Little Mermaid, and then out of college, I ended up in Fayetteville, and I met Robin, and I really connected with her on education and how important it is for education in theater, because that is how you continue doing theater, you know? Like, if you don't educate the youth,
right,
kids, if you don't let their interests spark at a young age, then there's no future.
There's nothing sadder in the world, and I get this every once in a while. Someone will come to the Gilbert and say to me, this is my first play. This is an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is my first play. And I used to say, you know, I wouldn't believe it. I would, but then I would find out, no, it's the truth. And so we don't like that.
Right. And I feel so sorry for them, too, because, you know, they'll send me emails or they'll talk to me, and, like, they almost are ashamed of it.
Yeah.
And I said, no, come in. Like, you know, we all have to start somewhere. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people are not exposed to it whenever they're young.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. So tell us now about the Gilbert program. Now let's talk about Gilbert Lee some, but also the summer program that just ended.
Yes.
The camp.
Yes.
The Gilbert camp. Let's talk about the camp first. Just really expand on that. When the child, it's a week long camp.
Yes.
Monday through Saturday or?
Yes, uh-huh. Monday through Friday, and then a showcase on Saturday.
On Saturday. So tell me, when a child walks in there on Monday morning, first, what are the ages, how many groups, and how do you break it down? What are they going to learn and experience by Friday?
Okay, what we do is we take ages from 6 to 17, and then depending on how many we have between those age ranges, really says who's going to be in what's called lower level and then upper level. And it's not always by age. It's a lot of maturity. It's also by experience. Like, we have a young lady who's been in Glee for 3 years, and she is at a level where she can no longer be in lower level. So we have her in upper level. She's only 10.
Even though the age...
Yes. No. Yeah, even though the age is usually cut off at 12. So we split them up, and then we go about doing warm-ups and going through vocabulary of theater, of acting. Then we split them up into acting classes. And I teach the acting classes with Robin Parrish. And Eudora Forbes is our dance instructor and also does music right now. And then Mary McGee is in charge of the lower level with scene study. And I do the upper level scene study.
So, Mary, do join us now, please.
Yes, yes, please do.
Of course. So, Mary, your age group is?
6 through 10.
I see. Yeah. And so you have them for the entire week?
For 2 weeks. And then the Glee camp I assisted just kind of ran.
I see. So Mary,
she
you
does a lot.
And okay. So then, but then you take the older ones.
Yes, yes. And so the lower level is really about vocabulary. It's about structure. It's about how theater works. The whole idea of just being on stage for the first time. You know, we did All the Places You Will Go. Like, we usually do poetry with the lower levels because that just gets them on stage. They learn how to make their mark. Be where they're supposed to be on stage, and their lines, memorizing lines. And then the upper level, I like to teach them, you know, they're past all that, so it's about exploring the character. Who are you? Who are you talking to? What do you want from them? How are you going to get it? So that's really the big difference between lower and upper level in all of our programs, really.
I see.
So it's a lot, yeah.
Well, how do you have... It seemed to me when I was there for the showcase that you had 40 kids.
Yes.
So how do you do that with just being one teacher?
Well, we split up. So while the lower level is in the theater doing dance and song, the upper level is in the lobby. If you've ever been to the Gilbert Theater, there's a lobby, a theater, and then a green room. And we use all three of those spaces to, you know, for our abilities. And so we'll split up that way, and then we'll swap. So then the upper levels will go into the theater and do song and dance, and then I'll have the lower ones with Mary in there, in the lobby.
Well, marvelous. And now, who are these children? I mean, are they? Do we have a cross section of the community?
Oh yes, it's very diverse. I mean, from all different backgrounds and all different, like, you know, I mean, we have people that are like their parents are involved deeply into the theater, and then we have people where it's all new families that have never, you know, some of them have never seen a play before. You know, it's just that their kid just has this natural ability and desire to be part of something, and so they bring them into us.
Now, where does this leave creative dramatics? You mentioned that
in
your training. So, I'm very big on creative dramatics myself. Tell me about how you approach that.
Well, that is something that we use, like, in exercises, and, you know, it's something that I want to continue as, you know, as I continue being the co-education director of going about that even more, going into, like, puppetry and creative storytelling. We do a lot of exercises with the kids in which, like, they have to, like, build a scene, you know, from scratch. You know, there's a little bit of improv in it. There's a lot of, like, what I call floor work, where, like, they create in their mind, and then they all come together, you know, and it involves a lot of breathing, you know, exercise. I mean, you know, you have six-year-olds that are learning how to breathe. Yeah. Like, that's, I'm getting off topic a little bit, but it all, you know, I think we intertwine all of those things together.
Yeah. We were doing campfire stories.
Yes, campfire stories, yeah.
In the second week, we had some really wonderful meditations. You can imagine, like, being at the campfire and s'mores.
So you had about 20 children. I was there. It was just wonderful. You had these, the campfire, and then they lighted their faces with flashlights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They like flashlights. With the little ones, you have to think, what's going to keep certain kids interested? They get a little distracted, or they start distracting each other, and so it's kind of learning how to pay attention.
Well, and two, I mean, you'd think, like, with upper level, you know, I'm introducing, like, sense memory to them. But the lower level, we dab into that as well. You know, like, have you been out in the woods before? What's it like? What does the temperature feel like? You know, what does it sound like? You know, what's the feeling of the, is it grass? Is it dirt? You know, like, so really just, like, bringing, I mean, kids are so great because they bring the imagination to the table. For some reason, when we become adults, we forget how to do that. It's a phenomenon to me. It just is. And there has to be somebody there that brings you back to that. And I guess I had to really lose it, though, you know?
Well, what was it? What Mossart said, that an actor is impaled on childhood like a fly in amber. We never, you know, I'm out riding my bike. I mean, it's just pathetic. Now, what are your plans, Mary and Brian? What are your plans for the future for the education program?
Okay, well,
things that we always have things we, you know, want next year and all that.
Well, 3 years ago, I met Robin Parrish. She had just come on to be the artistic director. And, you know, like I said, we had a lot in common whenever it came to education. And so the Glee Club was started. And so for 3 years, you know, that's been a huge success. So now we are starting a new program called the Gilbert Gate Program. It actually stands for the Gilbert Actors Theater Ensemble. And that is an intensive program for 17 to 25-year-olds. We're still taking actors right now. We're going to probably end the class with maybe like 12 students, but it is designed for actors that want to go to acting school, like it's like college prep, or actors that are in college that want more training, mm-hmm. or actors that have graduated, mm-hmm. and they want to elaborate more on their formal training. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're passionate and you want to do that, then, you know, that's what that is.
How far along is the planning?
It actually starts in September. And what we do is we meet in the mornings. We've already had auditions. We've accepted 6 actors already. So I'm probably going to take about 6 more. And, you know, it's going to be a very intensive program that, essentially, we're designing it like Robin and I went to acting school. Mm-hmm. The process, the studio environment, where you have teachers that assign you homework, and then, you know, like scene study, monologues, you show those in front of a panel of experts, and then you're critiqued, essentially, on your work. And it's very honest, because I think that's so important for an actor to have honesty. Yeah. From your instructors.
Well, that's so very exciting. Gate, that'll be easy, easy for me to remember.
Yeah, Glee and Gate.
And so. We can't forget these G's, that's for sure. Yeah. So September is next week, so this is imminent, isn't it?
Yes. And you can actually sign up, or if you know anybody that wants to sign up, by emailing me at adassist@gilberttheater.com.
All right. Good. Let's talk about your monologue.
Okay.
Or did you say it was a poem?
I actually have a poem. I knew we were going to talk about children's theater. I actually directed, you know, at the end of every Glee season, we have a play. And I just directed Gleekosaur, which was something I wrote and directed. And then the first play I ever did was Alice in Wonderland. And so I have a piece from Lewis Carroll called The Walrus and the Carpenter. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's kind of long, but I'm going to read a couple.
Is this Lear? Is this Lear or Or who's the other? Who's the play? Who's the author?
Lewis Carroll.
Lewis Carroll.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. All right. The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright. And this was odd, because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily, because she thought the sun had got no business to be there after the day was done. "It's very rude of him," she said, "to come and spoil the fun." The sea was wet as wet could be, the sands were dry as dry. You could not see a cloud, because no cloud was in the sky. No birds were flying overhead, there were no birds to fly. The walrus and the carpenter were walking close at hand. They wept like anything to see such qualities of sand. If this were only merely a way, they said, it would be grand. If seven maids with seven mops swept it for half a year, do you suppose, the walrus said, what they could get it clear? I doubt it, said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear. Oh, oysters, come and walk with us, the walrus did beseech. A pleasant walk, a pleasant talk, along the briny beach. We cannot do with more than four to give a hand to each.
Mm.
The eldest oyster looked at him, but never a word he said. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say he did not choose to leave the oyster bed. The walrus and the carpenter walked on a mile or so, and then they rested on a rock, conveniently low, and all the little oysters stood and waited in a row. "The time has come," the walrus said, "to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax, of cabbages and kings, and why the sea is boiling hot, and whether pigs have wings."
Good.
And that's it.
That's good. Thank you.
If you want to check that out, you can find that online or at your library.
Of course, we all love Lewis Carroll. One of my best friends is a Lewis Carroll collector of his first editions and letters. And
his writing is just so, like, imaginative and out there. It's so great for kids.
Every time you paused, I thought you were done. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Weird and, place. And so, yeah, when I taught children's literature at a community college for 20 years, he would come and speak, and he brought a watercolor that was painted by Alice Little, the girl that was his inspiration. All right, time for our free-for-all. We're going to ask Mary McGee to return to our round table. And the topic tonight is actors' nightmares. Over the years, I become very much aware that I am not alone in having this nightmare. And how about you? Do you have one, a recurring nightmare that you? My most recent one, I was in, I think, Portugal, or someplace, and only to realize, no, Lynn, you were supposed to be in Fayetteville. You had the lead in the play, and here you are, ogling the guys in Portugal on the beach. Anyway, so that's one recent one I had. Mary, have you had an actor's nightmare?
Well, I'm trying to think of anything specific, and you know how dreams are kind of hard to remember, but I have a vague idea of them involving missed entrances, getting calendar dates confused, you know, and that I'm supposed to be somewhere that I didn't know I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And the most vivid nightmares are from waitressing, which is also very popular with actors, you know, which are usually there is an entire room that's my section that I didn't know was my section, and they're waiting there for hours, waiting for me. And it's kind of all related to not being where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there.
Great list. Brian, okay. You have one or two.
I don't really have, like, actual nightmares, but, like, one of the things probably, like, when I'm watching a play as a director is, like, when actors are not talking to each other.
Oh.
Like, that drives me nuts. Like, they're just saying dialogue, and there's nothing happening. that's a nightmare to me. That's
a waking nightmare.
Yes.
Well, I think it's... James, how about you?
Well, you know, it was interesting you mentioned having this fear of being in another country when you realize, oh, I was cast for this thing. I was supposed to do a movie. It was like a little indie film, and I had agreed to do it months before, and I forgot about it, and I was... I took an impromptu trip to Rhode Island, and then I got an angry call from the producer, like, where are you? Like, well...
So this is a true story.
Yes.
If I were you, I wouldn't have told that story. But it's a little late now, and I don't want it cut out. Because he could cut this out, but I want it in there, and it's too shocking for words. But anyway, well, I think it's time to put this whole issue in front of St. Genesius, patron saint of actors. And here's my prayer to him. Dear St. Genesius, many of your loyal followers have a sleep disorder. Goodness knows, actors usually have no problem falling asleep. Alas, sometimes on stage, or so it seems. But during a deep, exhausted sleep, your humble players frequently have one reoccurring, terrifying nightmare. Namely, bad things happening on stage. Do you agree with me when I suggest the following remedy? Try always to have a scintillating bed partner with you when retiring. One's producer, always a good choice. This most likely means you will never achieve that deep level of sleep or so good for your health. But hey, no more nightmares, and perhaps a lead in an upcoming play. Preferably one that is about zombies. Dear St. Genesius, we await your guidance on this urgent matter. After all, fall openings are drawing near, and rehearsals are usually enough of a nightmare. Yeah, I hope this helps.
I just learned everything about where I went wrong.
All right. Now, it's time for the quiz, Brian. Are you ready?
Sure.
No, I'm gonna.
I don't have the answers to the quiz.
No, and I didn't give it to you this time. We're going to manage without you because I'm sorry to say,
I've been demoted.
You have your whole. Never mind. We won't go into that. It's not perhaps not.
Are they allowed to help me?
It's perhaps not very nice of me, but sometimes he has trouble keeping score. But I'm going to.
Can I have a warning? Anytime I try to help, I might have the wrong answer.
So Mary, he's not going to invite you, as evidently is not a very good idea. All right, I'm going to hand you a sheet here, Brian.
Okay.
With a list of seven famous screen actresses. And many of them have been on stage, too.
Yes.
And these women, these actresses, have all... One, been nominated or won Oscars.
Okay.
And here they are.
Okay.
You could read them if you like. Aloud.
Okay. Jane Fonda, Katharine Hepburn, Geraldine Page, Greer Garson, Meryl Streep, Betty Davis, Ingrid Bergman.
All right, there's the seven. Now, what I'm going to do, now let me say first of all, that if you are successful in this quiz, Brian, your prize is a fabulous book, Breathe and Speak. There's 55 scenes in here, and they are male-male, woman, female-female combination. It's just one of the best things I've ever read for this. And so, but you have to do a certain, we don't share how many you have to get right to get the book.
It's, so each lady is the answer
to a question. Okay. Here's the question number one. Which of these actresses was nominated 11 times and won 2 Oscars?
Betty Davis.
Very good. All right, very good. Okay, number... All right, Jamie, I am going to ask you to keep score after all. I think that.
Okay.
So you have, you needn't open that. Just use the envelope.
Oh.
Just use the envelope. All right. Number two.
That one was correct. Right?
Yes.
That was correct. Mary, you may have to be looking over your shoulder. That's too sad for words. All right. This actress was nominated 7 times and won 3 Oscars. She was from she was from Sweden. Okay. From Sweden.
Oh, Ingrid Bergman. And
very good. You got that without any coaching. Much coaching. All right, number 3, Ingrid Bergman, 7 nominations, 3 wins. Number 3. 7 nominations, 1 Oscar. She's English.
Geraldine Page.
Wrong.
Greer Garson.
Greer Garson. Okay, give him a half point on that. Okay, number 4. 13 nominations, 2 wins.
These are complicated. Tell me, like, what movies they were in.
Excuses.
I know it's not Meryl Streep. It's not Katharine Hepburn. Jane Fonda? Geraldine Page.
No, Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep, more nominations than anybody in history.
Oh, wait a minute. I didn't understand the question. So, what was the question?
Okay, the question was, this actress won 13, had 13 nominations for the Oscar. She won twice.
But she's actually been nominated like 19 times.
This is an old book.
Okay. So I get a bonus point for that. I get a bonus point for that because I corrected the book.
Well, so he does. We're giving him that, and okay. But I think the rest of them are accurate. Okay, number 5, 7 nominations, 2 Oscars.
Oh, Jane Fonda.
Jane Fonda.
Okay.
Let's give him half a win because he got that.
Okay.
All right, number 6, 8 nominations, 1 Oscar.
Geraldine Page. Yes, because I know Katharine Hepburn won 4.
And number 7, 12 nominations and 4 Oscars.
For the only actor to ever win 4, yes.
And that actress's name was...
Katharine Hepburn.
You win the book! Yes, you do. All because
so many numbers.
Because my research was flawed, and I apologize for that.
That's all right. It's all right. I was not, Meryl's still alive. So.
I was not going to. All right. So okay. Here is our. Well, James.
I was just going to give the score. Buddy.
Okay, do give the score.
Okay, 25. he got 7.5 correct. However, 2 of those he got only half correct. So that detracts from 1, so he got 7 out of 7 correct.
Yeah!
Okay. So we're giving him that book regardless of what...
My bonus points.
Exactly. Destroyed your mouse.
Very good. All right, this is the time for quote of the week. This quote is, speaking of Streetcar earlier, Kim Stanley played Stella, rather. And this is her quote. Now, before I give this quote, think back to the time, we read about it all the time, when actors were held in very low esteem throughout, you know, at least the Western world. You know, people would rent to them, it was just terrible. But this is what Kim Stanley says. It, the theater, is a really very brave and honorable thing to do. And don't we all agree? All right, any superstitions?
You know, I always forget that you ask this every week, and I could come up with a new superstition.
No, I have one.
Okay.
But Brian perhaps has one that and we'll stop him if we've already heard it.
I don't know. I'm not a very superstitious person.
Well, if you can think of one.
Oh, I know one thing I don't do. I do not, if it's a play that's been made into a movie, I will not watch the movie before I direct it.
Very
because
smart.
I feel that, like, whatever I see and hear through that director's vision is going to spill out all over the stage.
No,
I'll be called out.
Very good practice. Yeah. Well, another superstition, of course, is we never wish anybody good luck as they're walking on the stage or whatever, do we? Instead, we say, break a leg. This theatrical expression originated in music hall vaudeville days around the 1800s. Producers would have on standby as many acts as possible to fill the bill. It was not viable to pay every act, so if they didn't actually appear on stage or get to break the visual plane of the leg line, the wing masking, they received no pay. Breaking a leg became a good luck wish that said, let's hope you get paid for this performance. So picture this, they're all in kind of the backstage, you know, this is all vaudeville, one act after another, and time is up, and you don't go on, or you whatever, but you're back there hoping, but if you don't go beyond that leg, then you don't go on stage and get paid.
See, I've always heard a completely different story.
What was it?
The story was that the name of, they used to have curtains that were wood, and that they would close and open, and that they were called legs. And the idea was that when you were getting a standing ovation, they would have to open these again and then start closing them if the applause was going on too long. But if it kept on going, they'd have to open them again and open them again. And the idea was, oh, if you break one of these, then you're getting a really great applause.
Well, I think that's apocryphal. but let's leave that open. James, thank you for that, as strange as it is. All right, now time for book sharing. I've talked about all these books from the Gilbert Library, but you had one you wanted to talk about, Ryan.
Sure. Well, when you're in acting school, they assign you books to read, and the first book was actually An Actor Prepares by Stanislavski.
Yeah.
He also has two other books as well, Becoming a Character and Creating a Role, which actually I didn't really know until like my junior or senior year of college that the other two existed. It's the Bible. I mean, it's the Bible of acting. I mean, it's where it, you know, this guy... have you guys talked about this book at all?
No, Stanislavski.
Stanislavski essentially was one of the first people that said, huh, these are people on stage, and they should be like people. You know, like, they have real problems. And how can they find ways to solve these problems? You know, and that's where I really think that, and people could, you know, think that I'm wrong, but that's where I think that the whole realistic element that we see now with acting started around that time with what he was doing with the method. Now, I'm not saying that everybody should go off and do method. I think there are lots of different, quote, methods that people do, and it works for them. But I do know that method does work for a lot of actors. That's what I recommend. Another book, possibly, which I read my junior year of acting school, Respect for Acting by Uta Hagen, would be another book I would recommend.
Good. All right. Now, here's our time for mailbox. Mary, you know, I've gotten several letters this week, and people are calling me to task for not being very nice to you. And I don't think that's true. I respect you, but I don't know what I've been doing. But I got two letters this week saying, will you please stop giving poor Mary McGee a bad time? And I think they're getting me mixed up with...
I just can't believe you have fan mail. That's awesome.
That's me in the house.
Well, I think I'm going to put this very, very straight right now. There's nothing can be further from the truth. Just listen to some of the programs from the past.
Okay.
Now, we come to 60 minutes. I'm reaching for...
60 minutes?
60 I'm seconds. 60 okay. seconds. I am reaching for my stopwatch, Brian. I'm going to give you 60 seconds to tell how you would share, for the better, of course, how you would change theater in Cumberland County. And are you ready?
Yes. Well, as an educator, both in the schools and outside the schools with theater and acting, I believe that education is so important, and I think that that's where it all starts. If we can't find money to put on big shows and to give money that way, at least, you know, have teachers, you know, make education, arts in the education, an important aspect, especially in Cumberland County schools. I have a friend that just lost his job because they got rid of the theater program at his high school, and so they no longer need a theater teacher. And that is just crazy to me. That, I mean, we were telling stories before we were, like, you know, doing everything else, you know, like that's how we communicate. And that's to take the arts out of a curriculum, it's just, it's nuts to me.
61 seconds. Very good. 61. Excellent. Well, I couldn't agree more.
Sorry, running out of gas towards the end.
I know. I
don't want to even know. I don't want to know the name of that high school. Okay, time for birthdays. Celebrated birthdays. Birthdays of celebrated actors first. Van Johnson was born this day in 1916. Leonard Bernstein was born on this day in 1918. Joan Hackett was born on this day in 1956. Anybody else?
Well, Mary was very careful about making sure we didn't miss anyone from August. Roseanne and Brida was born in August.
Good.
August 3rd. Or she's 3 years old. I don't know how to take that. She was born in August 3rd. John
Klausen?
I don't know him.
He's one of our rep members.
Oh, yes.
I feel terrible now. Brandon Shane Bryan was born on August 8th.
Very popular sweet tea.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He always has an Abraham Lincoln-esque look to him. Jamal Johnson, who is in Young Frankenstein coming up, was born on August 13th. Rhonda Brockie, we mentioned her last week, actually. She was born on August 19th. Tyler Graper, who he does mostly Raleigh theater, though he is involved in an upcoming project happening in Fayetteville. He had his birthday on August 19th. Peggy Taphorn. I'm sorry. August 20th. Peggy from Temple. Okay. And Matthew Overturf had his birthday on August 21st.
Very
and
good.
Also, I'd like
oh,
to
wait,
add...
there are more.
Oh, there's more?
Jeez.
These are September.
Okay, well,
we'll wait until
we
next week. One more.
My brother's birthday is today, actually. And he's a huge supporter of the Gilbert. He comes to every show.
Well,
he brings his wife. So he's 35 today.
He's fabulous. I enjoyed meeting him. All right, now, here is a question, Brian, that is a listener challenge. And so, James, so far, has anybody made a response to it? Here's the challenge. Who is George Spelvin?
Maybe you should have these challenges at the beginning of shows.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Anyway,
don't guess.
I don't know, Lynn.
Oh, you don't know. Okay. All right, this is a listener challenge, and there'll be a special prize for someone who can come up with the right answer. And we'll choose a date when this contest ends. That has yet to be determined. So I want to thank you so much for coming to...
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
This is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company. Now I always add this P.S., a pod script. Brian, the question is, do you know the universal question? Do you know the universal question?
I don't know that.
You don't know. I'm not surprised. None of our guests have known it. But I do know the answer, and I'm going to share it one day down the line, and it's going to save the world.
I'll be waiting. For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round, to be back where the boys